Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Now, as you probably know, this month is the centenary of the signing of the Anglo-Irish Treaty, and there'll be much discussion about that and looking backwards. This is a clip actually from Eamon de Valera. This is now from 1955, so it's sometime after the event, where he explains why he's always opposed to partition.
Would you consider partition merely an Irish problem? It seems to me that in recent times many countries have been divided. Often against their will, usually against their will.
Usually against their will, that is so. It seems it's a very facile solution for statesmen when they have a problem like that to pretend that as a minority problem or other reason to cut off a portion of the country. But it usually solves nothing. It doesn't solve minority problems very often because it creates two minority problems instead of one. It doesn't lead to anything like a permanent peace. You see it today. You have the case of Germany. You have the case of Poland. You have the case of Palestine.
And
you have the
Korea.
Case of Korea, of course, and now Indochina. And they are purely temporary expedients that lead to no final solutions. So that I have been on every occasion this question of proposed partition of a country has risen, I've been always against it as a solution.
Interesting that some of those divisions have ended, and obviously some of them are still there now. An exhibition at the National Museum of Ireland is looking at the role played by the artists Hazel and John Lavery during the negotiations for the Anglo-Irish Treaty. It's called Studio and State, and we're joined by co-curator Dr. Edith Andrees. Edith, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Now, talk a bit, if you can, about the Laverys themselves, because they were based in London, but they seem to be regarded by both sides as somewhat neutral. How did they manage that?
Yeah, so that's right. They had their place in London in South Kensington, and that's where John Lavery painted in his studio, but also where they hosted dinners and luncheons. And Hazel Lavery, his wife, was really a celebrated star in London society at the time. She would have been very well connected. And John Lavery, of course, was a British society painter, meaning he portrayed the rich and powerful in Britain at the time. But he also tried to do something for his country, as Hazel urged him to do, by portraying Irish key figures that were involved in the treaty negotiations. And that's what we put on display, some of those paintings in the museum.
So this was very much Hazel's idea, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was not commissioned, so he did it for free, basically. The paintings were never for sale, and Hazel urged him to do something for his country. Lavery was born in Belfast and then, when orphaned, moved to Scotland.
But he's, as I understand it, what he originally wanted to do was be in the room when they were negotiating or signing the treaty.
That's right. He wanted to paint the signing of the treaty itself, but that was not allowed. So he offered all of the signatories to come and sit for him for a portrait. And most of them, or many of them, really took him up on this, including the five Irish delegates that signed the treaty.
Mm. Now, there is, though, also a portrait of the aforementioned Eamon de Valera, though that was on a previous visit.
Yes, de Valera was on the first peace delegation to London in July 1921. And that's when he sat for a portrait. And John Lavery commented that he, of course, wasn't there to look at, to sort of talk to him, but to look at him. But he wished he had more time with the portrait. So he was not completely satisfied with his portrait of de Valera. But when it went on display in Paris, actually, in November 1921, it was much acclaimed.
Really? Yeah. And so how much time in general, because one imagines the delegation were very busy at the time, how much time did they get to sit for him?
So he said it would take around 3 hours. We know some took probably less. There is the portrait of Chamberlain from the British delegates, and he's just painted in a very sketchy study type way. So it varied, and some portraits included in the exhibition in Collins Barracks are also done earlier. Churchill, for example, was painted in 1915 already, as they had been friends, the Laveries and the Churchills. So that would have been an earlier portrait that's included.
But it is interesting that this Irish delegation were not just going for to have their portrait painted, but would go for lunch and socialise with these people who were friends with with Churchill. It's quite extraordinary, really.
It is. And I think we tried to show in the exhibition that outside of the negotiation room, a lot of socialising obviously happens and a lot of relationship forming as well. I think a very important space to look at when talking about political negotiations as well, what happens outside of it. Also, they had leisure time. There is evidence that they went to concerts that were put on for them for the Irish delegation in the Royal Albert Hall. So the GAA and the Gaelic League in London would have organised a concert for them that souvenir programs were distributed and signed. One was signed by Michael Collins that we have on display. A lot happening, a gaming set with the roulette bowl that was gifted later to the museum after the treaty negotiations, and that was used by the Irish delegation. It's also some of the evidence. Yeah.
And Collins was and Hazel Lavery were very friendly with each other. Is that the case?
They were, and they would have met beforehand. They knew each other from around 1913 when Michael Collins was in London and really struck up a friendship and were in touch after the treaty negotiations as well. And throughout 1922, they exchanged letters as well and would have met in Ireland as well.
Mm. I assume then that can we infer from this that the Laveries were in favour of the treaty?
And they wanted to find a solution for Ireland. And Hazel urged Collins, who visited her independently as well in the days leading up to the signing of the treaty 100 years ago, she would have urged him to take what he can get now and try to get the rest, meaning full independence, later on. So they were very much in favour of finding a solution to the conflict.
Right, OK. Which obviously was a very pressurised situation. What's interesting in the exhibition as well is that you do have examples of pamphlets and literature that was produced both on the pro and anti-treaty side. Now, were they in circulation in London at the time of the talks, or were they produced afterwards?
So they would have been issued afterwards in early 1922 and then leading up all the way to the elections in 1922 back in Ireland. And they would really try and urge people to either, if it was the pro-treaty side, look at the benefits to be gained from signing the treaty and supporting the treaty through elections, or on the anti-treaty side, obviously the republic and full independence was the only genuine way to move forward in their perception. So it's very provocative language, often very loaded language, obviously, but very interesting propaganda material, all printed on Irish ink and Irish paper, as we can read at the bottom of the flyers as well, on both sides.
<Yeah. so. laughs> Given, though, that I suppose one could say that's something of the roots of the Civil War afterwards, was the language that inflammatory in the pro and anti-treaty literature that you could see what it might have led to?
Yes, it certainly reflects very clearly the split and the division that went through all of the Republican organisations in Ireland. And it's very, very much evidence, I think, of propaganda and the language of the time in general, though, as well.
Yeah, indeed. Fascinating stuff. Edith, thank you very much for coming into us today. The name of that exhibition is Studio and State. It's at the National Museum of Ireland. That's our lot for today.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.